find us on the way. And the DG also, TDG, the DG is also on the way.
This morning I don't have an indication the DG is joining. So I will update the chairperson a little bit later once I find out if she's on board the plane or what.
Oh, the secretary to the committee has just said the DG is not coming, but you are standing in as always. Yeah. Next time we'll get this position. Because we are always there, huh? Our agenda today, we will get a briefing from the Department of Communication on Electronic Communication Amendment Bill, Bill 17B of 2013, and the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa Amendment Bill, B18B of 2013. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Greetings to the Honorable Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprise, everybody in the room. We in the Department of Communications have been working very hard on the amendments of the two legislations read shortly by the Honorable Chairperson. We will be making a presentation. I will ask Mr. Mashile to run through the presentation, and thereafter we will also brief the committee on the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill. We will start with the Independent Communications Amendment Bill. Mr. Mashile.
Thank you, Judith. Good morning, Chairperson and members of the Select Committee. This is the briefing on the ICAPA Amendment Bill. And in terms of our delegation, as the Chairperson has indicated, Honorable Chairperson has indicated, we will be led by the Deputy Minister, Stella Ndawini Abram, and my colleagues at the back, is Khayalethu Rucha and Ephraim Adomo. And on my left is Mr. Azul. And in terms of the outline, we are going to provide the committee with the background and purpose, and then go into the specific amendments and make our own conclusion. The committee will be aware that there's currently an ICT policy review process that is underway that was also approved by Cabinet on the 1st of December. To be published for public comment. So in terms of this legislation, we thought that there are several areas in which changes may be appropriate, and the substantive ones have been earmarked for the review. So since the review was going to take between 12 to 24 months, we thought that it would not be appropriate to await those outcomes. Rather, we should focus on technical amendments so that the minister finalizes this technical amendment and submit the final act to the president for signature. In terms of the background to the process, the department was invited by the Portfolio Committee on Communication to present its proposed bills on the 6th of August 2013. The Portfolio Committee on Communications also invited public submissions, and then we responded to those on the 4th of October 2013. In all, there were 22 various parties that had made their comments and stakeholders as well, and we went through the same process in October and November, where on the 7th of October, the bill was approved and referred to the NCO by the National Assembly and referred to the NCOP for the debate. Hence, we are here today. In terms of the ICASA Amendment Bill, the purpose of the bill is to amend the ICASA Act of 2000 so as to insert new and amend existing and repeal obsolete definitions. We also want to provide for further clarity on powers and duties of the authority, to introduce mechanisms to ensure the accountability of the authority, including that of council and committees, and to confirm the use of electronic communications networks and services for the purposes of electronic transactions and to provide for matters connected therewith. Now I am going to go into the specific clauses. The clause 1 deals with the amendment of Section 1 of Act 3 of 2000 as amended by Section 2 of Act 3 of the Electronic Communications Act of 2006. The definitions contained in the Act are amended as follows. The definition of concurrent jurisdiction agreement is revised to permit the definition to encompass these other institutions and their power. Previously, the concurrent jurisdiction agreement was only between ICASA and the Competition Commission. So there are other commissions that have come up, like the Consumer Commission. You have also others related to children that will come from the Films and Publications Board. So we are trying to deal with that. Also, new definitions relating to days and electronic transactions, among others, are inserted into the Principal Act in order to align the Act with the ECA and the Electronic Communications Act. Honorable Chair and committee members will recollect that the ICASA Amendment Act was passed in 2000. So, and these other ones came after the ICASA Act. So, issues like these and electronic transactions were not aligned. Also, other definitions are amended, inserted into, or deleted from the Principal Act simply to correctly reflect the changes to the laws, such as the repeal of the Telecommunications Act and the correct name of the ECA. In terms of Clause 2, it deals with the amendment to Section 3 of the Act. This clause seeks to amend Section 3 of the Act by addition of subsection 5 to make it clear that any person who is aggrieved by the action, decisions, or findings of ICASA must seek redress in the court of law. The law is such that institutions like ICASA, regulatory making institutions, our law creates a framework that if you are not happy with the decision, you can take up the review to court. That's a normal process that is internationally done to if you are aggrieved by any decision related to this public body. And this will also include decision taking in consequence of recommendation by the Complaints and Compliance Committee. Complaints and Compliance Committee is a permanent committee of ICASA, and it's recognized by the law. In terms of Clause 3, amendment to Section 4 of the Act, besides minor amendments to the function or duties of ICASA, in paragraphs A to E of subsection 3, this clause also seeks to enable ICASA to give input to the Minister on matters that may affect or be affected by electronic transactions. In that regard, a new paragraph O in subsection 3 is being inserted in the Principal Act to allow ICASA to make recommendations to the Minister. Furthermore, although Section 74 of ECA provides for limited sanctions in certain respects, Section 7A to 17E of the ICASA Act currently deal with the powers of the CCC in relation to disputes and complaints. There is no specific power given to ICASA to determine penalties or sanctions, as the case may be in the Principal Act, even under regulation. So the bill seeks to remedy this situation by proposing a new power for ICASA in paragraph P of subsection 3. In this regard, this is a continuation. In this regard, ICASA must be guided by the principles of administrative justice, which are largely governed by PAJA, Public Administrative Justice Act. For consistency, the proposed new paragraph Q in subsection 3 reflects the the functions of ICASA in terms of Postal Services Act. The committee will recollect that in 2006, from the 1st of January 2007, ICASA assumed the mandate of regulating postal services, which was previously in the Department of Communications. Although separate legislation exists for the regulation of postal services, this one is, as indicated previously, by the Postal Services Act, which describes the role of ICASA in the regulation of postal services. The minister considers that it is more appropriate in the context of multifunctional regulatory authorities to place all the functions of ICASA in relation to its brought forward in the same section. A new subsection 3A is inserted in the principal act, which will require ICASA to conclude a concurrent jurisdiction agreement with other institutions when necessary and to review the same at least once every 3 years. Currently, ICASA has an agreement with the Competition Commission, and it's the only body that they have that with. So ICASA has indicated that they need to make other agreements with other such organizations. And this amendment allows ICASA to do that. And because our sector is such a fast-moving sector, we are indicating that at least it should be reduced every 3 years as matters continuously change. Inquiries may be conducted into any matter except where the matter may be, or is one that is of a nature where another authority may also have jurisdiction or may have primary jurisdiction, in which subsection 3A, subsection B, read with section B, subsection A will apply. For example, in the case of matters of competition nature, ICASA is required to liaise with the Competition Commission in terms of its concurrent jurisdiction agreement, and we have adopted wording in subsection 3A, subsection B, read with section 4B, subsection 8 from the suggestion provided to the department by the Competition Commission itself. So when we are dealing with this matter, we seek the view of the Competition Commission to say how should we amend this so that it covers them as well. So they gave us that suggestion and we agreed with it. This clause also deals with the powers of the delegation of the Council. In this regard, the general powers of ICASA in relation to decisions about licensing are critically important and may not be delegated to a council or a committee of ICASA. One of the key functions of ICASA has to deal with licensing. And I think what we are emphasizing here is that that cannot be delegated to a committee, to any other person. Council as a collective is held responsible for this one. Furthermore, a new provision dealing with the decision to revoke a license is inserted in subsection 4 because of the implication of such a decision. Oh, now it's clause 4 and 5, amendments to section 4B and 4C of the Act. These clauses seek to amend 4B and 4C of the Principal Act in order to shorten the time period within which inquiries may be conducted by ICASA and concluded to accommodate concerns such as inquiries to render results more quickly in the interest of all involved. This section must obviously be read with a new definition of date. What this has created is that inquiries will usually are supposed to be taken for 60 days, but in reality, because of the definitions that were there, they will take about 90 days, because the way the days were defined. So we are trying to ensure that ICASA is very efficient and it does not take a lot of time. So that's why we have this amendment. In terms of clause 6, amendments to section 5 of the Act, this clause seeks to amend section 5 of the Principal Act in order to include expertise and experience in the fields of, amongst others, broadcasting, electronic communication, postal operations, public policy, electronic engineering. I guess the point about this section is that when we call for the appointment of counselor, ICASA requires new skills. And also we had to include new skills that would be in line with the events that are taking place in the sector. As I indicated previously, our sector is so fast moving and we require new skills. So the amendment is to some extent a matter of emphasis. Clause 7, which I think will be painfully on your, because slide 13 I think was on page 14 on the slide 13. This clause seeks to amend section 6A of the Principal Act in order to refer to a collective performance management system as well as an individual one. Specific sections have been referenced to introduce more certainty concerning the criteria for performance and to ensure that the process can be objectively assessed. The Principal Act currently provides that the evaluation of the performance of the chairperson or other councillors must be conducted by a panel constituted by the minister in consultation with the National Assembly. The performance management system for the chairperson of ICASA and other councillors, as adopted by the National Assembly, presents government and the National Assembly as well as ICASA with a robust mechanism that evaluates and measures performance. Continuing on the page, this performance management system provides an opportunity for all parties to engage constructively and provide for more rationality in respect of the resources allocation process so that the funds are allocated where they are most likely to maximize the achievement of the outcome. Given the importance of independence and impartiality and the constitutional imperatives, several other amendments have been made to the appointment of and service by councillors and their remuneration, performance contracts, and assessment mechanisms. Performance contracts in particular have been reconsidered, and the minister agrees with the suggestion of the South African Law Review Commission, Law Reform Commission in this regard, namely that performance should not be measured individually, but rather against the council as a whole, who in turn may measure the performance of management of ICASA as a whole. Yes, this one is related to the performance measure system, and we are trying to ensure that it happens in line with what the legislature or the law had intended it to do. In terms of clause 8, amendment to section 7 of the Act, this law seeks to amend section 7 of the Principal Act in order to clarify that the chairperson of ICASA and other councillors may be appointed only for a maximum of 2 terms of 5 and 4 years only respectively. When ICASA council is appointed, only the chairperson that serves for 5 years and the rest of the council, the 8 councillors serve for 4 years. So this one seems to say they cannot be appointed for more than 2 terms. So they are all in line with the law, supposed to serve for 2 terms. Furthermore, councillors are required to serve full-time unless they are involved with academic pursuits or occupy offices as members of public interest bodies or organizations. This must be disclosed in writing and recorded as provided for in subsection 11B and 12.2 of the Principal Act. Unlike other bodies, ICASA Council is an executive council that serves on a daily basis. So here we are trying to ensure that if ever there was somebody who wanted to hold 2 jobs, it should be communicated to the relevant authorities and it must be known. So that's why we are saying they must disclose it so that it's recorded. I think it's holding everybody accountable. Clause 9, amendment to section 11 of the Act. This clause seeks to amend section 11 of the Principal Act to the effect that meetings of councillors must be held no less than once a month, but can be held more frequently. Furthermore, this clause seeks to tighten the provisions related to the quorum at meetings of council. The increase in the size of the council has given rise to difficulties in the past, in part because of collective decision-making manner in which the council operates. Furthermore, the chief executive of ICASA may attend any council meeting in terms of the new proposed subsection 5, although he or she has no voting right. I think this one was a very serious issue during the process. It has to do with openness and accountability and governance. So we were trying, as a sitting parliament, we were trying to address that ICASA is run efficiently and in an open way. This is so that the administrative arm, all of the above amendments, arm of ICASA, the CEO, and the other staff and the operational or regulatory arm or the council can be more closely aligned by the flow of knowledge between them, and so that the strategy can be coordinated. This one relates to why we were insisting that the CEO of ICASA has to attend the meeting, even if he does not have the voting right. He is the one that is responsible for the management of staff. So if he attends the meeting, at least he is able to communicate council's position to staff and ensure that there is flow of work. And so far as the CEO is the accounting officer of ICASA in terms of section 36 of the PFMA, the COO will also be aware of any other issue that may have an effect on the budget of ICASA, hence his attendance of the council meeting. Clause 10, amendment to section 11 of the Act. The clause seeks to amend section 11 of the Principal Act to the effect that the minutes of meetings contemplated in section 11 must be made public. This will ensure more transparency in the workings of ICASA, therefore administrative comfort for licensees, because licensees need to know about the decisions that are being taken about their activities. Under section 11A, minutes of council meetings must be published in the ICASA library and on the ICASA website, which initially was drafted so as to require publication within 14 days. ICASA is a public body, and its minutes are not where there's confidentiality, the law allocates for that, but ICASA is a public body, all of its minutes, just like the committee's minutes are published on the parliament website, they should also be published in the library and on their website. This is, we are trying to ensure that there's openness around the decisions that have been made. Confidential information, as I indicated, will not be included in the publication provided that it has been determined to be confidential under section 14. The ICASA Council has the right to determine or to agree with anyone who wants their they have to give good reasons if they think that their information is confidential and should not be published, and the ICASA Council has to agree with it. At this point, we wish to note that the provisions of this section should not be used in some in circumstances where information is not truly confidential as described. ICASA is entitled to information to assist in the carrying out of its function and the application of its power. In so far as that information is in any event required to be published, for example, in a reference interconnection offer, the information may not be classified as confidential by the licensee. Clauses 11 and 12, insertion of section 11B and an amendment of section 12 of the Act. Clause 11 seeks to insert section 11B into the Principal Act in order to improve governance and accountability of ICASA. Requires ICASA to produce a code of ethics within 180 days of this section 11B coming into force, and specify the governance principles according to which the ICASA and the council must function, including the following: the principles of mutual respect and collective responsibility, the requirement that council shall have all information necessary to make an informed decision, taking into account of all relevant facts at its disposal, and a commitment by members of the council to highest level of professionalism and corporate governance. In the formulation of this session, we have considered local and international examples of similar codes. This code also echoes the kind of principles that Chapter 9 institutions are expected to uphold. This code will also be considered when evaluating the performance. This code will also be considered when evaluating the performance of the council, and the minister has considered other ways in which the impartiality and accountability of ICASA can be improved. In accordance with the requirements of ATMAL report, the minister will also require that a register be kept for declaration of any gift, benefit, or gratuity received or delivered or derived by a councillor as a result of his or her actions or omission under the Act, which, as indicated above, must be open for inspection. I think this we are putting in CASA in line with the best mechanism for governance and openness. Chapter, clause 13, amendment to section 14 of the Act. This clause seeks to amend section 14 of the Principal Act in order to tighten the provisions related to the staff and administration of ICASA. In relation to clause 15, 14, 16, and 17, which relate to amendments to section 14A, 14B, 14C, and 14D of the Act, the clause 14 seeks to amend section 14A of the Principal Act in order to allow ICASA to appoint experts as it may deem appropriate without consulting the minister. And so far as ICASA budget is insufficient for cost of for a necessary expert, ICASA must approach the minister for assistance. Previously, when ICASA had to appoint an international expert, they had to consult with the minister, which had taken time. What we are saying here to ensure efficiency and that they run in a very effective way, we are saying that if the budget is more than what was budgeted for ICASA, ICASA must, this is the only time they can approach the minister for assistance. In terms of clause 15 and 16, 17, we seek to delete section 14B and 14D of the Principal Act as they are not applicable any longer. Section 14D is being replaced by new section 23A. In terms of clause 16, we seek to amend section 14 of the Principal Act to confirm that the information presented to ICASA must be kept confidential unless it has to be disclosed in terms of section 12. Now and then licensees, when they submit, for example, their business plan and other commercial sensitive matters, they will require ICASA to keep them confidential so that their competitors are not able to access such information. In terms of clause 18, amendment of section 15 of the Act, this clause seeks to amend section 15 of the Principal Act in order to clarify that when delegating authority to sign checks, this delegation may also be to a council. This may be an appropriate level of delegation in our view. In terms of clause 19, insertion of section 15A into the Act, the clause seeks to insert section 15 into the Principal Act in order to require ICASA to prepare an annual plan for the year ahead at least once per year and to provide this to the minister. This will enable more accurate forecasting of funding requirements of ICASA and better planning and liaison between ICASA and the Department of Communication. It will also enable more transparency and certainty in relation to stakeholders. Clause 20, amendment to section 16 of the Act. ICASA is a constitutional institution under Schedule 1 of the PFMA. The CO's roles are clearly set out in this Act and do not need to be duplicated in the ICASA Act. However, the role of the CO in producing financial statements, having them audited by the AG and presenting them to Parliament, has been restated through the amendment to section 16 of the Principal Act by clause 20 to make it clear that this remains the role of the CEO, not the minister or the council, as some confusion had developed around this area in the past. The CEO must, however, present the same document to the minister at the same time in line with the reporting requirements of other Chapter 9 institutions. We do not want the minister to see this document first in Parliament. I think it's common courtesy that they should be shared with the minister and the Department of Communication. Clause 21, Amendment to Section 17 of the Act. This clause seeks to amend Section 17 of the Principal Act in order to clarify the intervention of the committee of ICASA and ICASA itself. ICASA has the right to, from, there are some that are in, like the CCC that are in the law, and ICASA also has the right to form committees as it goes along with it. So we are trying to clarify how it should work. Clauses 22, 23, 24, 25, and 26, amendments to section 17A, 17C, 17F, 17G, and 17H of the Act. Clause 22 seeks to amend section 17A of the Principal Act in order to clarify that members of the CCC are appointed for a fixed term. It is hoped that this will enable continuity and the establishment of a body of reliable and good president. In addition, the authority will appoint a chairperson from the members of this committee. The committee's further obligations and responsibilities are dealt with following process and are also framed to improve outcomes and processes within the CCC. Clause 23 seeks to amend Section 17C of the Principal Act in order to clarify that persons who are not licensed but who are in breach of the Act or the underlying statute must be able to bring complaints or disputes to the CCC in terms of these sections, and licensees must be able to bring complaints about other persons. Clause 24 seeks to amend Section 17F of the Principal Act in order to strengthen the relationship between the council and inspectors appointed to investigate complaints and other matters on behalf of ICASA. Inspectors must not be permitted to investigate matters without strict supervision, instruction, and reporting obligation. Clause 25 seeks to amend Section 17G of the Principal Act in order to confirm that, in addition to the producing a license, other documents may also be required, including, for example, type approval certificate. A new subsection A is inserted to Section 17G in order to require more transparency and administrative fairness to the process by requiring inspectors to produce documents that they use in support of their application to magistrate for warrants. And clause 26 seeks to amend Section 17H of the Principal Act in order to increase significantly for offences of contravention contravening the Act, taking into account of the level of fines applied in other sector-related legislation, such as the regulation of interception of interception of communications and provision of communications-related information Act of 2002. The purpose of the increase is to take into account also take into account of the change in the value of money since the Act was first passed. As I indicated, this Act was done in 2000, so many things have changed and the values have increased, so we need to increase in line with the inflation as well. And to ensure that activities that are taken by ICASA under legislation and regulation can be effectively enforced so as to constitute a disincentive to those licensees and other persons who may wish to operate outside the ambit of the sector legislation. The minister believes that a threat to civil liberty may outweigh the payment of a financial penalty, and therefore sanctions may include imprisonment for certain offences in the alternative. Penalties may be imposed up to a maximum fine or a maximum term of imprisonment. This is also to create certainty and consistency in sentencing. The minister knows that a court should not be compelled to impose a minimum sentence where public policy dictates that this would be out of step with the gravity of the offence, which is why we have chosen a maximum sentence provision. Furthermore, a new subsection is inserted, subsection 4 is inserted into the Principal Act in order to enable the authorization of inspectors to dispose of equipment that cannot be type approved, so as to simplify the requirements for storage and safekeeping of this equipment, which cannot be lawfully used by any person when it fails to meet the prescribed standard. This inspectors usually face a problem where at the airport you find that people bring cheap goods that usually interfere, and then I think the authority, the law was giving them authorization to dispose of such equipment. That is setting the economy very badly. Clause 27, repeal of the Chapter 4 of the Act. This clause seeks to repeal Chapter 4 of the Principal Act, which is no longer applicable due to the passage of time. And then clause 28, insertion of Section 23 into the A into the Act. This clause seeks to insert Section 23A into the Principal Act to refer more accurately and completely to the State Liability Act, following the repeal of Section D of the Principal Act. Clause 29, substitution of Section 24 of the Act. This clause seeks to substitute Section 24 of the Principal Act in order to clarify that the provision of the Act takes precedence of over any other law except the Constitution relating to the regulation of broadcasting, electronic communication, and postal service. In terms of clause 30, amendment to the preamble of the Act, this clause seeks to amend preamble to the Principal Act in order to reflect the amendments proposed in the bill. And clause 31, amendment of the contents of the Act, this clause seeks to amend the contents of the Act after the preamble of the Principal Act, consequent to the insertion of the new section and the repeal of existing sections from the Principal Act. And clause 32 related to short title and commencement. This clause provides for the short title and coming into the operation of the Act once it is assented to, signed, and promulgated into an Act of Parliament by the President of the Republic. In terms of the Chairperson, I apologize. In terms of our conclusion, we recommend that we proceed with the amendment to the ICASA Act with the guidance of the Select Committee. The Department will also contribute if required when the law is finalized following the comments of the committee. On the interest issue of the Department, will also work with the state law advisor. We are prepared to assist to prepare appropriate wording to clarify when required. Thanks a lot, Chairperson and members of the committee.
Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the Deputy Minister. You are more than welcome. And we really thank you for being with us today on the first meeting of the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises. And we wish you all the best for 2014. I understand the DDG said you would like to say something immediately after Mr. Temashile has presented this to us. And we thank Mr. Temashile for the presentation. We will, after the DM has spoken, we will go to the electronic communication amendment bill. And then members will ask questions for clarification. Thank you. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me join you in wishing everyone here the best wishes for 2014 and the other years to follow. But firstly, I would like to apologize for the fact that I joined you later. I come from that rural province where we had a program at Eastern Cape, so the first flight was only leaving in the morning after 8, so I had to join you later. Chairperson, I just want to talk to a few things that the bill focuses at. I'm sure honourable members have taken note that in most cases you find us differing whether with the operators or with ICASA as the department. Those differences are not personal, but they're based on how we do things, the pace that we take at times to develop policies that respond to what the market requires in terms of the ICTs. And then as the regulator, at times they are forced to regulate without the policy. Then we said it is high time that we make sure that we introduce this bill or make amendments so that we are able to align the policy with the regulations that are made by the regulator. Secondly, as the presentation has been made, Chair, we will note that there's lots of governance issues at ICASA. So we are saying it is high time that as this House, as we are responsible for appointment and the other things, we have a responsibility to ensure that whilst we give a responsibility over each other, but that responsibility must not be in conflict of what the other hand does. Because what we want to do is to ensure that we build effective communication. And for us to build effective communications, it means the other hand must know what the other hand is doing so that they're able to work together for the betterment of the people's lives of our country. Lastly, Chair, it is important that, well, let me make an example on this one, with the school's connectivity or the universal service obligations that have been imposed to most operators. You will know that most of the operators, they do not adhere or they don't comply with what the regulator instructed them to do. And then because the regulator's capacity is limited, they are often taken to court, they are litigated and all those things. Then we are saying we need to give teeth to ICASA to be able to ensure that they enforce compliance. And even during terms of enforcing fines, they must make sure, because right now it's a very small amount, that is to the big players just opting to pay the fines instead of adhering or delivering on the universal service obligations. So we are saying we want to give or build more capacity in the organization to ensure that everything that as the lawmakers we wish to be done, it is done according to those. Because if we are issuing out licenses, as government, we've got specific reasons why we do that. And there are things that we want to achieve. Therefore, if we are, in a way, not achieving those, it means we are failing our people. Also, there has been, out there, Chair, some confusion around the role of ICASA versus the Competition Commission and other regulators that are out there. We are saying it is high time that we position ICASA in a way that whatever role that they play does not conflict with the Competition Commission. Because we have the same role players as stakeholders, but we have a responsibility as ICASA to ensure that how we regulate talks to the policy, and at the same time, we don't deprive any stakeholder of whatever benefits, be it a consumer or from the other operators that are focusing on money-making or profits. Lastly, Chairperson, there had been other issues that required extensive policy change that affect how ICASA functions. We have agreed that we are going to defer those to the ICT policy review so that when they come and present whatever the final outcome, those things, we don't find the ICASA bill doing something else and the panel or the policy paper introducing something else. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Can we go to the second one? Electronic communication amendment bill. Thank you. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'll be presenting the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill to you. The Minister and Mr. Mashida also already spoke about the ICT policy review process. The purpose of the bill is to amend the original ECA of 2005, to insert, amend, or delete certain definitions, to align the Act with broad-based black economic empowerment, to refine provisions relating to licensing, make further provision towards ensuring effective competition, to remove regulatory bottlenecks, to require the minister to establish a council, the Broadband Advisory Council, to make provision for the discounted rate at which internet services must be provided to schools, educational institutions and public health establishments, to authorize the minister to require that certain information be submitted to the minister, to make provision for the fiduciary duties of members of the board of USASA, to provide afresh for the appointment and conditions of appointment of the CEO of the board, and to make further provision for the utilization of money in the USASA. Clause 1 is about the amendment of the definitions. A new definition of Advertising Standards Authority of South Africa is inserted. Definitions for allocation and assignment are inserted based on the radio regulations of the ITU. Allocation is intended to mean the classification of a use of a particular band of spectrum, while assign has a similar meaning to license. A consequential amendment has been made to the definition of broadcasting service radio frequency bands to confirm that allotment should be read to mean allocation. A new definition is inserted to define broad-based black economic empowerment in line with the BBBEE Act. The new definition of broadband is intended to permit a flexible approach to the fast-moving technological advances in this area and avoid amendment of the bill whenever the parameters need to be adjusted, also following the broadband policy issued by the minister in December. A definition is inserted for the CEO of USASA. Continuing on the definitions, Chairperson, the definition of common carrier is amended to refer specifically to Sentech Limited because a cabinet minute provides that Sentech's strategic role should be defined. This amendment does, however, not exclude other persons from being designated as common carriers to ensure fairness. The definition of electronic communications facility is amended to include access to wiring in multi-tenant buildings. Also included in the indicative list of these sorts of facilities are exchange buildings, carrier-neutral hotels, and data centers. The definition of end user is amended to confirm that this person could use services of a licensed entity or a license-exempt entity. We've also updated the definition of ICT charter. The definition of ITU is amended. Currently it says International Telecommunications Union instead of Telecommunication Union. The definition of licensee is amended to include a license to use the spectrum in terms of Chapter 5 of the Act. A new definition of political party is inserted to clarify when such a party should be considered to be constituted for purposes of the Act. The associated definition of registered political party is deleted. Effectively, these two definitions are identical. We've just deleted registered political party and reinserted it and named it political party, merely because everywhere in the Act the word political party is used and not registered political party, so it's really cosmetic. The definition of radio frequency plan now seeks to refer to section 34. The definition of radio frequency spectrum is substituted to include broadcasting in addition to electronic communications for clarity, and broadcasting service has also been added to the definition of radio station. Other clarifications have been added to the definition of radio frequency spectrum license. Continuing on the definitions, a new definition of service license is inserted to confirm that it is a license authorizing the holder to provide any service contemplated under Chapter 3. The definition of universal service is amended to include electronic communications network services. Clause 2 2 deals with the amendment of Section 2H of the Principal Act, where we seek to replace historically disadvantaged individuals with the term broad-based black economic empowerment. Chairperson, throughout the bill, we seek to align the ECA with the broad-based black economic empowerment act, similar to what has been explained by Mr. Mashile on the CASA Act. Section 3.1e is amended to ensure that the Minister can give policy guidelines to ICASA on spectrum fees. Section 3.2 is amended to enable the Minister to issue policy directions to USASA. It further seeks to broaden the scope of policy directions that may be issued. It seeks to afford the Minister an opportunity to properly fulfill his or her own policy mandate. There are many matters on which policy should be made, and these amendments enable the Minister. Often, Chairperson, when we make policy and policy directions, we have to go to Section 3 of the ECA and often find that it's quite limiting, and often we cannot, the Minister cannot fulfill his or her mandate fully due to the limitations of the law. The addition of subsection D enables the Minister to issue policy direction on spectrum fees. An amendment of subsection 5 confirms that policy should follow the same public consultation process as policy directions. Again, currently the consultation process in the ECA only talks about policy directions, and there's a vacuum about policy itself, and we are of the view that policy should follow the same public consultation, and therefore the bill now makes provision for that. The amendments of Section 4 propose that the Minister be given a copy of regulations prior to their publication by ICASA, merely to improve the administration and coordination between the Minister and ICASA. Amendment of Section 5. This clause seeks to amend Section 5.3b by replacing regional with provincial, simply because regional is often unclear, while provincial is more specific. The deletion of subsection 3D is to address the existing situation, which requires municipalities, small networks, and other government-owned networks or services to apply for an individual license when they may be providing services within a relatively small area. In subsection 6, the reference to managed liberalisation policies are deleted in the bill. A new subsection is inserted to confirm that subsection 8 applies to any electronic communication service or network service, electronic communications network and radio frequency spectrum as contemplated in section 6. Clause 6, amendment of section 8 of the ECA. The amendment seeks to authorize the imposition of additional license terms and conditions on designated licensees relating to universal access and universal service. The amendment further seeks to require ICASA to impose conditions on licenses subject to the Chapter 10 processes. Amendment of Section 9. This amendment seeks to link the equity ownership requirement with ICASA's powers to prescribe regulations on broad-based black economic empowerment in the ICASA Act, which is an alignment of the two acts. The amendment of Section 10 seeks to enable ICASA to amend a license in accordance with Chapter 10 and any regulation that may have been made under that chapter. Chapter 10 being the competition chapter. Pro-competitive measures can, for example, be imposed under that chapter, and ICASA should have a power enabling them to make amendments to license subsequently. Clause 9. This clause seeks to amend Section 13 to ensure that transfer, letting, and subletting of individual licenses, including the transfer of control of such licenses, requires the prior approval of ICASA and that public consultation is done on such process. Amendment of Section 16. The changes provide that class licenses obtained by any person may not collectively assume the scope or coverage of an individual license. It also enables ICASA to prescribe the intervals at which registrations may be submitted and allows the transfer, letting and subletting of class license upon notification to ICASA. ICASA's approval is required, but the clause also deems approval to have been given if ICASA does not respond within a specified period of time. The context there is that the registration procedure should be easier and quicker. Clause 11 is about the amendment of Section 17, and it seeks to simplify the class license registration process and turnaround time, and includes consequential amendments following the amendment of Section 16. Clauses 12 and 13. Due to the critical importance of the provision in Section 21 in relation to the guidelines for the rapid deployment of electronic communications facilities, especially for broadband rollout, that's a serious priority for us now, the changes to Sections 20 and 21 seek to replace guidelines with policy and policy directions made by the Minister to remove the uncertainty on the status of guidelines. The question has always been, so if the Minister issues these guidelines, what are they, and are they enforceable? Will anyone be obliged to act in accordance with such guidelines? Now they'll be called policy and policy directions. Section 23 is new and seeks to require ICASA to prescribe how licensees must exercise their rights and fulfill their obligations. It also seeks to authorize ICASA to impose conditions and obligations on licensees having regard to any policy directions issued by the Minister in Section 21. Again, it tries to create a match between the special rights being given in the section that should be linked to appropriate obligations as well. Clauses 14 to 16 deal with amendments to Sections 30, 31 and 34. The amendment to Section 30 seeks to align the radio frequency spectrum issues in Chapter 5 of the Act with the National Radio Frequency Spectrum Policy. The management of the use of spectrum must comply with the National Radio Frequency Plan, as well as with the ITU standards. The concept of assignment is introduced in subsection 2A to confirm ICASA's licensing role. The word assignment is synonymous with licensing in relation to the radio frequency spectrum. Section 31 is amended to require that a radio frequency spectrum license may not be assigned, ceded, or in any way transferred, and the control of radio frequency spectrum license may not be assigned, ceded, or in any way transferred to any other person without the prior written permission of the authority. We therefore make sure that a proper process will be established to cater for this kind of process where radio frequency licenses are being transferred, where ICASA's approval must be obtained first. ICASA should respond to applications for amendments to frequency spectrum licenses within a specified period of time. This is in line with amendments to the Act in general to require more accountability and efficiency within the regulatory process. Amendments to Section 34.1 are made to ensure the Minister also addresses the coordination and approval of any regional radio frequency spectrum plans that are applicable to the Republic. Clause 17, amendment of Section 35 of the ECA. This clause seeks to close a loophole by requiring that persons possessing equipment and facilities must also obtain a type approval from ICASA. Currently, the provision would say persons that, for example, use electronic communications equipment must have such a license, but here it includes whoever possesses to close that loophole. Clause 18 Standards Act has been updated in section 36. Clauses 19 to 20 relate to the amendment of sections 37 to 38. These amendments seek to redefine the reasonableness of interconnection requests by changing the requirement for financial feasibility to economic feasibility. This concept of economic feasibility is more apt because of the criteria that can be taken into account in considering the feasibility of the request. The changes further seek to ensure that interconnection agreements are not in any way discriminatory compared to comparable network services provided by a licensee to itself or an affiliate. Finally, they also enable class licensees to participate in interconnection. Clauses 21 to 24, amendments of sections 42 to 45. These amendments seek to delete the time frames that are now irrelevant, to redefine the reasonableness of facilities leasing requests by changing the requirement for financial feasibility to economic feasibility to have wider application, to ensure that facilities leasing agreements are not in any way discriminatory compared to the comparable network services provided by a licensee to itself or an affiliate, to provide clarity on how essential facilities are to be treated and provided without delay. So, Chairperson, Honourable Members, the previous slides dealt with the interconnection part, interconnection chapter of the ECA, and where we made amendments there, for example, financial feasibility to economic feasibility. Here it's about the facilities leasing chapter, and similar amendments are also proposed. The amendments further seek to enable ICASA to act swiftly in terms of this provision, which is essential to the implementation of a non-discriminatory access regime, and further seek to nullify exclusivity provisions contained in any agreement or other arrangement that is prohibited under section 4310, 1 year after the commencement of the Act. This provision, Chairperson, you'll recall, as written in the ECA, was originally intended to regulate, for example, the undersea cable situation in the era that Telkom was still at exclusivity, and there were certain exclusivity arrangements that the ECA then tried to regulate appropriately. Now, if such exclusivity arrangements still exist, they'll be invalid 1 year after the commencement of this Act. Clause 25, substitution of section 55. It seeks to ensure that ICASA may regulate scheduling of adverts, infomercials, and program sponsorships as proposed by ICASA. The scheduling of adverts, infomercials, and program sponsorships was previously regulated with regulations issued in 1999. Those regulations were called the Advertising Infomercials and Program Sponsorship Regulations. In a recent review of these regulations, ICASA found that the current provision in the ECA do not enable them to make any amendments to these regulations, and they requested the department to assist in inserting a provision back into the ECA to enable them to continue this very important work. Clause 26 is about the amendment of section 62. This proposed amendment addresses the obligations of a common carrier and provides that it is deemed an electronic communications network service licensee that provides signal distribution for public broadcasting. Amendment of section 65. These changes seek to clarify that the restrictions on ownership and control of broadcasting licensees apply in relation to commercial broadcasting only. Clause 28. This amendment is about the Section 67 Competition Act provision. This clause seeks to delete subsections 1 to 3 to ensure a clear demarcation between ex ante regulation being the preserve of ICASA and ex post regulation being within the Competition Commission's domain. as the Deputy Minister explained, it's important to clarify these things. It's common cause in the whole sector that the current powers in subsections 1 to 3 do not belong to ICASA and can only be exercised by the Competition Commission, and subsequently those three subsections must be deleted. B, amendments to subsections 4 to 7 are intended to assist ICASA in implementing the regulatory regime set out in Chapter 10. The proposed deletion of subsection 6 is also as a result of the amendments proposed in relation to subsection 7. Subsection 7 seeks to list pro-competitive license terms and conditions. The pro-competitive license terms and conditions so listed are not an exhaustive list. Clause 29 seeks to remove some redundant time frames. Clause 30 seeks to amend people to persons with disabilities. So wherever the Act refers to people with disabilities, the bill seeks to make amendments to the Act to refer to persons with disabilities, which is the more appropriate term and constitutes an alignment with the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Amendment of Section 72. Section 72 is being amended to ensure that the public can access government directory information and related services free of charge. This service is currently provided by CITA. The four-digit number allocated is 1020. The call center handles calls for government information, queries, and directory and related services. The problem is that currently, because Section 72.7 refers to government directory information services, the cost is carried by DPSA. It's one of those loopholes used by operators, so we want to change the wording to not only say government directory information services, but government directory, comma, information and related services, so that all those calls to the call center are and must be delivered free of charge. Insertion of Section 72A, it's a clause that seeks to empower the minister to establish the National Broadband Council, aligned with the broadband policy that was recently issued, to advise the minister on broadband policy and implementation. Amendment of Section 73, it is proposed that Section 73 be amended to assist with the enforcement of the E-rate provisions and to include public health establishments. It is necessary to make it clear when an electronic communication service licensee should give the discount and when the licensee is entitled to a discount from the from the electronic communications network service licensee. In this area, Jefferson, there are a lot of disputes where operators simply refuse to give the discount. A service provider would, for example, argue that they won't give the discount to the school because the upstream provider of the network are not giving them a discount. So we're trying to address some of those hurdles in the amendments. A problem is also experienced due to service providers that do not want to give the 50% discount to USASA when USASA pays the charge on behalf of the school. They simply say that the law says they must give the discount to a school, so if USASA pays, then USASA do not qualify, which makes no sense at all. But we now say in the bill that if USASA then pays on behalf of the school, the discount similarly applies. Subsection 5 is deleted as no differentiation is now made in the proposed subsection 1 between different schools or higher education institutions when applying the E-rate. New sections 79A and B are inserted by clause 34. 79A seeks to ensure that the state and persons employed at 112 emergency centres do not attract liability as long as they perform their duties and services in good faith. The proposed section 79B seeks to enable access to information held by ICASA, USASA or any other person for the purposes of the performance of the functions of the minister. We've experienced in the past that ministers responsible and deputy minister for a number of functions, but when asking relevant information from USASA, ICASA and operators, information is not forthcoming. So how is it possible? How is it possible that the minister cannot get access to relevant information? So this section then tries to take that further and enable such access. Lack of information hampers a number of functions, including impact assessment and monitoring, market reviews and the imposition of remedies, compilation of relevant statistics, and provision of updated information to the ITU. As a safeguard, this section has been made subject to the Promotion of Access to Information Act. Clauses 35 and 36, amendment of section 80 and insertion of section 81A. The changes make it clear that USASA is subject to the PFMA. The other changes seek to improve the governance of the Universal Service and Access Agency of South Africa Board, including specifying exactly what its fiduciary duties are. The amendment of section 82 seeks to remove contradictions between that section and the definitions of universal access and universal service. If we read the definitions in section 1 and we read section 82, then they do not mean the same thing, and we try to now align them. Universal access is defined in the Act as universal access to electronic communications network services, electronic communication services, and broadcasting services. Section 82.3A1 provides that the minister must determine what constitutes universal access by all areas and communities to electronic communication services and network services. No mention is made of broadcasting services, as in the definition. The amendments to this section seek to correct this discrepancy. The same applies to the universal service concept. Insertion of sections 82A to 82E. This clause seeks to provide new provisions on the appointment of the CEO of USASA, conditions of appointment, termination of employment, and delegation of authority. These provisions are aimed at improving governance provisions in relation to the CEO. Provision is also made for the appointment of an acting CEO. Clause 39, amendment of section 83. This clause seeks to amend section 83 due to the new provisions in sections 82A to E regarding the CEO. Amendment of section 87. This is done to reflect the appropriate section in the Constitution. Amendment of section 88. This clause seeks to correct the reference to electronic communications network services and electronic communication services and broadcasting services in the context of subsidies that may be paid out of the USAF. It further seeks to empower the minister, acting with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, to prescribe additional uses of money in the Universal Service and Access Fund from time to time. If there is a project of critical national importance, the executive should be able to then add to this list of uses of money in the Universal Service and Access Fund following a due process. The clause furthermore seeks to require USASA to create, at least every 2 years, application procedures for persons to apply for subsidies from the Universal Service and Access Fund for all the purposes for which funds may be distributed under that section. So this essentially are the application process and the distribution procedure to enable applicants to really access the funding in the Universal Service and Access Fund. It also seeks to change ICASA's obligation to review the definition of underserviced area every 2 years instead of biannually. It further seeks to enable USASA to make recommendations to the minister every 2 years to determine the meaning of needy persons. Currently, that role is indicated as being for the minister in the Act, and the bill proposes a role for USASA that is an expert body in this field. The changes amount to technical amendments to clarify and simplify the provisions as well. Clause 42, amendment to section 89 of the Principal Act. This clause seeks to ensure that community broadcasting service licensees are exempt from contributions to the Universal Service and Access Fund. This is an important amendment to us, Chairperson, in the context of growing the community broadcasting sector. The section has been amended to clarify that USASA must collect monies due to the Universal Service and Access Fund from the authority. From a practical perspective, it means that ICASA will first collect the money and then pay it over to USASA, because there's a responsibility in the Act for USASA to account for and keep record of the money in the Universal Service and Access Fund. Amendment of Section 95. This clause seeks to amend Section 95 by removing the 24-month time frame, which has already lapsed. This amendment is necessary as the current provision in effect prevents ICASA from repealing or amending regulations issued under the now repealed Act. The current provision, Chairperson, simply says that ICASA may amend the old regulations issued under the repealed Act, such as the Telecommunications Act, and it said ICASA must do so within 24 months of the coming into operation of the ECA. Now we're long past that 24 months, and now someone can interpret that to mean that ICASA cannot continue amending those old regulations or repealing them, and we seek to change that position in this bill. Amendment of the arrangement of sections, which is really just a consequential amendment to amend the index in accordance with all the changes in the ECA. Clause 45, amendment of law. This clause seeks to amend the definition of common carrier in the Broadcasting Act of 1999 in order to align it with the definition of common carrier in this Act. We have, Chairperson, in this bill made an amendment to the definition of common carrier. There is another definition in the Broadcasting Act, and to avoid confusion, these two definitions should correspond and talk to each other. The last one is clause 46, which is the short title, and of interest and importance here is that different sections of the bill that will become an act, we should be able to put different sections into operation on different dates. This is necessary because of certain time frames in the law. If, for example, the minister is obliged to issue the policy on rapid deployment guidelines within 12 months of the coming into operation of the Act, but those guidelines, we are not at an advanced stage yet, that particular section should not be put into operation. Or to put differently, that section should only be put into operation when we are almost ready to give effect to it. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister.
Thanks, Chair. Just to summarize and give brief examples of why we had to take this route of making amendments on the SCA. Chairperson, most members would know that as we engage on the ICT revolution, we have made some strides, but as we're doing that, we have noticed that we are experiencing some challenges. At times we've made progress that we don't believe ourselves. But for example, on the framework that deals with the licensing part, we will notice, Honorable Chair, that what is actually happening on the ground is the fact that we get to give licenses to the same people. which creates monopoly over the industry, then we are saying it is high time that we ensure that we create competition and ensure that everybody who qualifies can have access to those. Again, Shepherdson White, we were happy to introduce all the changes that we introduced through the First Act 1996. What we did not take into consideration is what are the implications of us giving licenses to whoever that we extended to without giving enough support. We have noticed, for example, the case with the pay TV, Top TV, whereby a state would take a decision that we're going to increase competition, we're going to give an opportunity to others, but without taking into consideration, do they have the full capacity that is required for them to compete with the big guys out there? Those are the things that we are saying it is high time that we look into those, so that both from the policy side and the regulatory side, those are addressed. Secondly, Chairperson, on the issue of the radio frequency spectrum, mostly as a country, we have focused more on the commercial side of the spectrum and did not balance it with the security side. Understanding what would be the implications at times if we give spectrum to those that at one day will decide to be a threat to our own government. We have, like we have done, of course, with Vodacom, sold it to Vodafone. We have done lots of things, which links, Chairperson, to the issue that was mentioned in the presentation, whereby you are given a license to occupy a certain spectrum, and then you decide to lease it out without the authority knowing about that, so that they can check whatever that we need to check, including the security background. What threat do you pose to us as the country? Now, I'm not just looking at the financial part that you are going to contribute to. We have noticed, Chair, again, that there has been a number of complaints amongst the operators themselves when it comes to the issues of facility leasing. Other people would even go to an extent of saying, you know what, as much as I'm using this service provider, but I noticed that their calls are dropped a number of times. At times, those operators will then go back to whoever that is giving them access to their infrastructure. Those are the things that we are saying it is high time that they are addressed. Wiring and everything must be leased properly and regulated, Chair. On the issue of broadcasting services, again, although we focus more on the commercial side, because if you look at that, again, there is monopoly, Chair. If you go through who has the number of radio stations that we have, we go through who owns, it tells a lot about the story that we have. Not just saying we have made strides, good strides, of course, but in terms of ensuring that there is redistribution to everybody in terms of what is available, as we all know that spectrum is a state asset, therefore everybody that qualifies to benefit from it must benefit. Lastly, Chair, is the issue of ensuring that USASA plays its part in an effective way. It cannot be, Chair, that every day we come to the committee, we report of whatever that we have done, but that does not take into consideration the monies that we were given. We experienced the same AEG challenges, but even in terms of the universal service access that we are saying the agency is responsible for, we don't manage to meet a certain percentage that it is to make a difference. That is why we are saying, as the policy maker, we have a responsibility that when we come back to Parliament, we know that all of these delivery agencies that we have under the Department of Communications do what is expected of them according to the law. We need to strengthen capacity where we need to, so that they understand that whatever they are doing talks directly to the objectives of the laws that we make. Thank you, Chair. Those were just a few things that I wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for clarifying more to us. I'm going to take this opportunity now and give members to ask questions for clarification. Members must remember that we're still going to deliberate We've just received the two bills. Today we're going to go with the bills and satisfy ourselves. When we come back and deliberate on the bills, then we'll go deep into these two pieces of legislation. But for now, can we ask questions for clarity? Over to you, members. Honorable Sibande, I welcome you back in your absence. You are more than welcome. And as I said to other members, I wish everyone the best for 2014. That, you know, that also refers to you. Over to you, members.
Okay. All right. Ma'am, thank you very much to, also I wanted to apologize to you in particular about maybe for my late coming. I was already early here, but due to some problems around the parliament, I was still busy somewhere. Also, I'd like to say compliments of the new season to the department as Ma'am, I wanted to find maybe it's a comment. You see, Deputy Minister, with the whole exercise, I think we welcome the proposals, but at the same time, it's true that we ought to be cautious. I'd like to remind you with something. While I was still serving by then in the Home Affairs, with under the Filimen publication, we had some challenges because our clauses must be also include the security in terms of proper monitoring. Because if we just give licenses issued, that's for broadcasting, sometimes it's very disturbing. I'll put an example during now, a few days ago, about the issue of our icon. There were people who were taking an advantage and sent wrong information, very insult about us. So what do we expect? Luckily, we belong to this organization who so disciplined, who can discipline us as well. But in a normal situation in other countries, I think something was going to happen. The way they were circulating some of the, in the media, in some, you see this, what you call it, what is it? WhatsApp and other things. Some people were circulating that information. So my problem is proper monitoring. How are we going to make sure about some of these clauses in terms of proper monitoring? Because if we don't have monitoring, proper monitoring, we'll be having some problems. And then also, you spoke about the issue of compliance with USASA. Say with you with your presentation, then to me, I'm not sure about some of this. When you talk about the issue of compliance, but some of these laws, I would be satisfied if they cover compliance, because you set an example that in some instance where people were requested to give 50% discounts, and then the people are unable to pay. And then what else? If I don't want, I don't want, and then what else? Because these clauses which are going to maybe, which you are proposing to us, it must have clear direction in some way, somehow, to indicate that if a person doesn't comply with 1-2-3, and then 1-2-3 is going to happen. Because without that, people will continue and will do nothing. And then, as normally, somewhere, it's also Chairperson, when I was a little bit concerned about the issue of this paper which was given to us, it's not clear. I think the manner they put it, they mustn't worry about saving papers, but it must be clear for us so that it can be user friendly. Okay, another one which was worrying me. Time and again, there were some, in the first presentation, you spoke about taking powers from the minister, something like that. And then you spoke about confidentiality. Let me start with page 21, when you spoke about clause 14. That you seek to amend the section 14, with note 48, necessary without consulting the minister. You see, my minister, my problem, my worry with that one, if we do what we do without consulting the minister, at the same time, somewhere, there is a proposal from them which says they wanted the, they are requesting that the CEO to participate in the ICASA because as an administrator or as their accounting to ICASA. To me, it doesn't augur well that why do we exclude the minister, because if we don't consult, to me, consultation with the minister is that something else. We know that the role, it is not the role of the minister, but in terms of the consultation, to me it's a key fundamental issue, because the minister is the one who's making sure, who's making on your behalf the proposal in terms of getting your budget, etc., etc. But now, if you don't want to consult with the minister, that's something else with that clause. I'm not satisfied with that clause as well. And then somewhere, what? Members, I indicated that my papers are so horrible. They spoke about the public. There is a place where they spoke about, I think it's page 18. Page 18, where they spoke about the confidential information. Yes.
On this presentation.
Yes, the first one of the ICASA. Confidential information, bulletin 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let me start with that one, that the confidentiality of confidential information. You see, Minister, I'm not sure here with this one, what do we mean exactly? Because some people nowadays, they've got a tendency that they issue anything which they like. I'll put an example when people, they thought that they were scared about the issue of Inkandla and I like the way they put it. And then they said, this is a freedom of speech. But let me come to the side of the presenter, is that how do we make sure that the thing is confidential due to these leaks? Because there are a lot of leaks. Come again, there are a lot of leaks. And then the last one was the issue of the public participation. I forgot which page because I've listed it. That, okay, fine. Because with the issue of the public participation, if maybe they can, it's public consultation. You spoke about the public consultation somewhere. That how are we going, then when are we going to start about it? Because my worry is one. I know that it differ. Whereas section 7, when you're taking it out, whether it's going to be section 75 or section 76, etc., etc. Because with our counterparts here, sometimes it gives problems if it's not section 76. Some people, they thought that each and every section, you must take it somewhere. While some of the things, they don't need a rally. As long we consult with the provinces, because provinces are having powers to go and negotiate on our behalf. But even then, they try to politicize everything, which is not even political, in terms of the protocol. How do we take our matters down in terms of the public participation? So I need a clarity on that one. And maybe I'll come later on.
Honorable
Mama
Goma. Honorable Coronavals, followed by Honorable Jacob.
Thank you, Chairperson. I haven't got really a lot of questions at this stage. But Honorable Sibandi touched the one I've had firstly here, and that is the public participation. I also worried about that, in which way are we going to do it, and if it's already done, where and when was it being done, and at what places. So that is regarding ICASA. But the public consultation is done on the electronic communication, and that is on the slide 18, you said it. I'm quite happy there, but what about the previous ICASA's amendment bill? And then I also want to know, Honorable Sibande also touched on that one, is the mechanisms we're going to use and have in place regarding the regulations of certain broadcasting stations, and what is in the bill to do to protect the public and everyone that is there. Thank you.
Thank you. Whilst we're still waiting for Honorable Jacobs, if maybe the department can give us an example of the circumstances and conditions that qualifies an entity to be exempted from a license. And as a committee, I recall when we were dealing with the bill that was establishing Draco in 2007, the state-owned company license exemption was suggested, but it was successfully opposed by stakeholders on of unfair to other players in communication sector. If you can clarify that. And just to get a sense of the key issues, stakeholders in the public, the key issues that were raised by the public regarding the bill as it was referred to Parliament, when we're still, can you really share that with us, with the committee? And if you can also clarify on page. I see the very same mistake is still coming. This, you said in 2002 the bill was in Parliament. But the very same mistake is still coming, that, you know, you're singling out the one house, the National Assembly, and of which you deal with both houses, but why now you only, you here on paper, you also, that's why I think the NCOP is being regarded outside. People doesn't actually understand what role the NCOP plays. So if you can hear us on why, really, this is the second time, and having served in this committee for a long time, even in 2002, this issue was raised sharply so. And if we can, maybe at this point in time, this is the first parliament, if we can do the right thing. Over to you, Honorable Jacob.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the presentation, as well as the submission from the Deputy Minister. Chair, I don't know, maybe we are from holidays, our minds are busted. My questions are not going to be systematic. Or also it is because we did not get enough information before we come here. Just like these acts and so on. But on page 36, what was presented, there were paragraphs which are not here. Yeah, the first one. There were paragraphs which were not included in our document. When Mr. Mashiga was making a presentation here, I realized that what he was reading there is not what he had. The other one, I think it's important when you make amendments, we need to understand the logic behind that, because you cannot just try to endorse something that you don't understand. For instance, if you say you change because the issue of a quorum was a problem. We need to know the reasons why there was no quorum. Why was it difficult that there should be a quorum? Also, the issue of to consult the minister, to consult with the minister. When you want to remove those powers that were given to the minister, we need to understand that logic. And as well as the issue of signing of checks, and to say you can assign that to another council to sign checks, we need to understand the logic behind that. So we cannot just amend it without even knowing what were reasons behind it. The other one that I want to understand, this issue of councillors serving two terms, does it mean it is the end of it all? Let's say somebody is young, has been the councillor for two terms, it means it's 10 years. Let me say he becomes a councillor at 40, 10 years it will be 50. Does it mean even after 5 years he cannot come back and be a councillor? Because it can happen, someone can be a councillor being young. So are we denying him or her that chance to become a councillor again? So that's another issue that I want to understand. On the issue of experience, somebody to be a councillor experience, do you exclude ex-members of parliament? For instance, somebody who was serving in the Department of Communication, does it mean if he is not here, he has resigned or he's no longer a member of parliament, he cannot become a member of that council? Those are some of the issues that I need clarity on. And also on the issue of the role of the CEO is being, you say it is in the PFMA, so it's not necessary that it should be part of the Act. Maybe can't you make reference that the role, their roles, the reference that their roles they are found in the Public Finance Management Act, rather than say we are just deleting that. The other one, the last one, on the issue of, I think the second presentation, we are deleting the political party. Not the registered political party. You say you're comfortable with the political party. What happens if the political is not registered, the political party is not registered? Maybe if you could get clarity on that issue. To Mr. Wirth, you remember I spoke to you the other time about this issue of Vodacom when you buy data bundles, and whereby they say if you have bought too much data bundles, and then they are within 1 month. After that 1 month, you lose those data bundles. To me, I regard that as what is it, chicanery. So how do we accommodate people in the act to avoid such discrepancies? Because you cannot determine that I'm going to use so many data bundles. But what Vodacom says, if at the end of the month you have not used all of that data bundle, you lose it. So how do we try to protect an ordinary citizen of this country? Thanks.
Okay.
Then, sorry, pardon me for doing this. Actually, I wanted to ask a clarity about your relationship with Santec, ICASA and Santec. You know what, in terms of licensing, I know very well, I'm fully aware that Santec most of the time is for frequency and all that. But to avoid the duplication, also to avoid some problems or challenges which are within, because some people they can use an excuse that no, this is not our problem, it is Santec. Other side, this is not our problem, it is ICASA. Thank you very much.
Thank you, members. Department DDG, over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me apologize to this Honorable House. As I said, we learn some things as we take the journey. I don't believe, Chairperson, that it was because we were undermining this house when the department did not come to appear and make some presentation to the house. One thing I also noticed that actually I only got to understand myself, Chair, when I arrived in Parliament, was for many years I thought NCOP is just provinces there. It has nothing to do with national until the first time that I came here. In so much that I had to ask, okay, explain to me now. How does National Assembly work? How does NCOP work? So I know it is our responsibility, both as the political heads of the department, but together with yourselves in Parliament, to ensure that, because also even in government, we bring lots of people who don't understand how Parliament works. So I want to apologize that it was not because we were undermining the House, the fact that we did not come here, but indeed, yeah, we made an error. Chairperson, a number of questions have been raised, of which some of them I will refer to the team to respond to. But I just want to take bite on some of the things that have been raised. For example, there's the issue on the amendment of ICAS, I think, on 14A, whereby we say that we need to give permission to ICASA to go and hire experts without consulting the minister. As I said, Chairperson, we have learned some of the things as we undertook the journey and decided to unlearn what did not work for us. If you look at the space that we operate in, this number of advancement of the things that are happening, which needs the authority to respond immediately at times. The operators that we are regulating have high number of experts and capacity, therefore, which make them to be able to challenge whatever that as the regulator would present without us engaging effectively on them, because at times we lack the relevant skills, because at times the expertise that is there in the authority is not the one that helps the authority to respond effectively. For example, there are scarce skills. Let me refer to the management in terms of the spectrum, the auctioning of the spectrum. We don't have that in the agency, although we are responsible for spectrum management. But those are the things that we say when there is a need for us to get such expertise. Let us allow ICASA to be able to do that. Well, if they are to follow the route of going through the minister, we know it takes processes. Well, it's not going to come directly to the minister. It's going to go through the different officials and maybe land at the minister's desk after 2 weeks or a week. So we are trying to avoid some of those things. But we are not saying they are going to do as they please. At the end of the day, they report to Parliament. And as we are a political head of ICASA, although it is independent, it is important that we know what they do. Therefore, we do have bilaterals with them monthly to keep us updated about what it is that they are doing. The other one, Chair, that I wanted to talk to is that another apology on the missing information and the fact that we did not provide the honourable members with the relevant information prior. That one we have to apologise, I guess it's because of the holidays and all that, then documents probably were not sent on time. We apologize for that. But what I would also like to advise honorable members is that, especially in this field of communications, we need to regularly update the information that we have on ICTs. Not necessarily what government is doing, but what is happening throughout the world, whether by private sector or what. Then it means for us to be able to get some of that information, we need to read. Whether we read online, I normally complain about the fact that we are Department of Communications, but we bring lots of papers to yourself. And we are saying we want to build a digital economy. And if we are going to achieve that, it means we need to ensure that it starts by ourselves that are the role players or the stakeholders in the field to ensure that everybody goes e-literate. Therefore, I don't know how it's going to be done. I hope Parliament will allow at least the members of the committee to have, whether it's tablets or what, so that at least you have first-hand information, even the smartphones that we have. The other one, Chair, were the council terms.
that after 2 years, you then released. I'm going to make an example, Chairperson, especially to ourselves, of ourselves as politicians. We are given mandate to come to Parliament by our electorate to serve 5 years, and your mandate is exactly that, to serve 5 years. What happens after 5 years is not the responsibility of the electorate. It depends on how you conduct yourself there, that they will be able to say, okay, we want you back or we don't want to. One of the restrictions, Honourable Member, is to ensure that we avoid too much lobbying. We know that the authority is vulnerable out there. Then if you have a person who has been sitting there for some time, it is bound to happen. Not because one wants to be whatever, but because of the environment that we operate in. I became a deputy minister at whatever age that I became a deputy minister. Can you think of what's going to happen when I'm dropped? But there's one thing that I know. I was just given a privilege to serve. What I know of is the term of Parliament 5 years. Therefore, when I get appointed to the authority as a councillor, I'm there to say 5 years. Then we say at the most 2 years. Two terms, which is your 10 years. It's not guaranteed that you're going to land on the second term again. So what we're guaranteeing you is 5 years, because Parliament says these are the things that we want to achieve. We think your contribution will assist us. We're giving you this 5 years. And then probably they say, well, you have done well, you have contributed, and we still need you for continuity and whatever to improve how we do things. We don't exclude members of Parliament in terms of being councillors. I don't know if there's anything that has ever happened. Because also what is important, Chair, is to ensure that we have a balance and informed council. Therefore, if you have worked at the for the Department of Communications, it means you are bringing some understanding from the policy side that will help the authority to drive its work. Same applies to Parliament. You are bringing how the law is made, helping the councillors to understand when they regulate and how to balance that policy. That as much as we make regulations, but we must ensure that those regulations talk to the laws that are made in Parliament. I will then hand over to my team. I don't know who's going to start first. DDG, you will get it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Deputy Minister. Honourable Chair, would hand the questions and the team will also come in, both Mr. Mashile and Mr. Alfwoods. First, Chairperson, just a clarification around the monitoring of the broadcasting content. Chairperson, you know that broadcasting is the ring-fenced area of the Constitution, and hence it is actually regulated. The sector that needs to be regulated independently, mostly, it is broadcasting. And regrettably, there are instances where, for instance, the behavior of such content may be offending to the audiences out there. But the mechanism that is in place to deal with this, and this is actually, if you like, Chairperson, the primary role of ICASA, this regulating of broadcasting. There is, for instance, an issue of the terms and conditions in the license that the ICASA issues to the broadcaster. Should it be found that such a broadcaster has contravened the terms contained in the license, one mechanism to deal with problems of, depending on the scale, it could be to revoke a license, could be to issue warnings, things like that. Another mechanism, which is also very helpful in terms of monitoring broadcasting, because broadcasting is an independent sphere, is the self-regulatory mechanism that exists. For instance, the Broadcast Complaints Commission, to which members of the public can make a complaint, issues can be heard there, and the determination against such a broadcaster can be made. These are some of the conditions that exist. Of course, in terms of content, which relates to classification of, say, pictures or films or any of that sort. The Films and Publications Board, as Honorable Sibanda said, plays a key role there, and it is important that these bodies actually work together. We do, in fact, have regular interactions with the Films and Publications Board. We do have workshops to also understand where their mandate goes and so on. But, Chairperson, I think the issue generally as raised here it is very much noted. On the issue of the e-rate, Chairperson, 50%, we have, in this amendment, looked at this issue more broadly. The difficulty with it is that there is no uniformity. And the regulations that deals with it actually did not bring to bear the whole issue of uniformity. Where does the 50% start and where does it end? Because it only says a school can be given that. So with this amendment, we are seeking to clarify that issue more and to also extend the facilities that can actually benefit from the 50%. And indeed, you may find that ICASA still experiences problems in terms of regulating this 50% rate. But, Chairperson, we are trying to address it in that way. Regarding the issue of confidential information and how we would determine, or how the ICASA Council will determine this, Chairperson, I would want to bring to the attention of the committee that in this sector, information, because it is a competitive sector, so data is very sensitive. And often ICASA would know what information will actually put them into trouble. You know by experience that ICASA is actually litigated in many instances. And hence we also have that clause there that says the minister may request information that may help him make certain decisions. It's because often in this sector, companies don't want to give out information that is sensitive, that can be detrimental to their business. So the determination there, council can actually adopt a protocol that will help them determine which of the information can be made available publicly in when they issue their minutes, as indicated in that section. Just on consultation, Chairperson, raised by Honorable Kunevat, I think there was an omission there. These two bills were taken concurrently to the public hearings, and during our presentations also in Parliament, Chairperson, we saw that both the bills attracted a lot of attention and interest in the public. We did, of course, as enjoined by this act, make them public, extended for public comments, because some of the issues were actually, in fact, complex. And so we did undertake a very extensive public consultation, which comments were considered by the department. We took long, because the issues and the interest in these bills, as we would have seen when the other House of Parliament were looking at it, there was such a keen interest in both the bills. And so the same process with ICASA did actually happen. I'll ask Alf to speak to the issue of the conditions on when a license can be exempted. One example I would give, Chairperson, is that in terms of class license, for instance, the law makes it clear that if a community broadcast applicant applies for a community radio station, after 6 days, that person is deemed to have the license. So it's those kinds of conditions we're dealing with. Where in the applicant does not have to wait too long, and such a licensee can easily be given a frequency and things like that. So in those kind of conditions, but there may be more. I think I am going to jump the issue that Honorable Deputy Minister had addressed on the reasons why the budget is not necessarily consulted to the minister. But the point I want to make is that the minister is still consulted wherein ICASA exceeds the allocation. That still happens. The other issue of the CEO and referencing the Public Financial Management Act. On this particular issue, Chairperson, we received a letter from the Minister of Finance about this. And the drafting, in fact, there was a task team that was looking at the drafting of this section. Our observation and experience in this is that the Public Financial Management Act is meant to supersede all provisions pertaining to public finance matters. And we're discouraged from taking functions and lumping them here for probably for interpretational purposes. So we opted to keep it simple and with the guidance in that letter that the minister sent to the department. And referencing Chairperson, we can look into that. I'll consult the legal team and see how that can actually work. We welcome that. There are also issues around the relationships with between ICASA and Sentech from Honorable Sibanda. Our relationship with these entities, both of them are actually reporting to our Honorable Ministers as portfolio organizations. Their difference is that the other one is licensed, that is Sentech, is licensed to provide signal distribution. In terms of this this legislation also, Sentech can also provide connectivity, can provide infrastructure as enjoined by the electronic communications network license that it holds. Yet ICASA is a independent regulator. And hence this issue of how does ICASA relate to the minister and the powers thereof. This issue came very much in terms of the consultation that we were having, and it's a very delicate issue, Chairperson, because sometimes you do not know when ICASA says it has considered a policy direction of the minister and at the end take a different direction. This mechanism and making sure that we can build on the policy that the minister makes such that it follows through into giving effect to the desired impact in society and in the market that we regulate. Just the issue on the Vodacom bundles and the experiences there from Honorable Jacobs, I think we share that concern, Chairperson. The minister has actually established a process that deals with lowering cost to communicate. And in the workshop that he convened in September 26, this issue also came up. It's one of the problematic issues that ICASA needs to really regulate. It also goes with the issue of the exact rates or tariffs that the service providers issue against what they call promotions. You find that there are continuous promotions to an extent that when you buy that you lose certain rights which necessarily you're not supposed to lose. And in this case, this is a program that the minister is closely looking at. And it is an issue of public interest, as you would have observed. And this is actually a wrong conduct. Also, we support the view that Honorable Jacobs is expressing there. Chairperson, the issue of the stakeholders and the issues that came in these two bills, there's a lot of issues which were raised by the public. I will list a few, but I would also like to make a submission to yourselves in relation to these issues which came up in the public hearing. One of the issues is whether the amendments, because initially these amendments also had an issue of the Spectrum Management Agency. We also had an issue of the establishment of the Competition and Compliance Commission. We also had issues relating to the tariffs, which are already current in the Act, and some of these issues have taken a slight change given the submissions which were made convincing to the department. The issues which generally had policy impact, for instance, the size of the council, which was a proposal initially, all of those issues, some of them deferred. We also had, for instance, in the ECA specifically, the issue of which facilities are we supposed to list, and the extent of the list in the Act, active and non-active facilities. So there's a number of issues, Chairperson, which also came up. The issue of the powers of the minister versus those of ICASA was also a strongly debated issue, I must put out. And we will manage to obtain the balance to also get the view of the state law advisor on that. For instance, on the very early days of the bill, we would have preferred to have a language that read something like the minister issues a policy or policy direction, ICASA sort of implement instead of consider, and we've retreated on those kinds of language given the legal advice that was given. So all of those issues, Chairperson, we can submit a list to you. There may be one or two issues that ARF wants to look at and comment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Committee members. I may be repeating some of the things. It's quite difficult to keep track of which matters have now been responded to, but please excuse me if I do. On the matter of security issues and licensing, and so especially social media regulation, it's an interesting concept, and here one must balance the rights, because on the one hand you have freedom of expression rights as fundamental rights, and on the other hand those rights can also be limited in terms of a certain section of the Constitution that provides the parameters for such limitation. So, where do you strike the balance? This Chairperson may recall that in 2002, when the ECT Act was promulgated, it made provision for that kind of content regulation. And there was a huge outcry, public outcry, Big Brother headlines and things like that. So it's not an easy matter, but it's something we are slowly moving towards, and I believe is being seriously considered under the ICT policy review. The matter of E-rate and compliance, from the DRC side, certainly we have an oversight responsibility as well as the administrator of the legislation to ensure ultimately that the E-rate provisions are effective. But from a practical perspective, it is ICASA that issued E-rate regulations in accordance with the provisions of the Act. ICASA, in my view, must now amend those regulations to make provision for the amendment in this bill. And then, and unfortunately, that's where the buck stops with ICASA, because they are responsible for ensuring the effective implementation of the E-rate. They're the only ones with the power to really enforce it and ensure that licensees comply with the obligations in the Act and the relevant regulations. On the issue of the appointment of experts, Bearing in mind that the existing provision of the Act says that the minister must give approval to ICASA before ICASA can appoint an expert, really a consultant that's an international expert. Certainly there, it may be argued that that is quite limiting. Therefore, it was proposed that it be changed, that it's only when ICASA is out of budget that it's required. The amendment does make sense in our view, in that effectively appointing consultants and experts are really an operational matter. The argument can be also be made that it affects the independence of ICASA if they can be dictated to say who they can appoint or not, where in circumstances where they are quite reliant on experts because they are dealing with complex technical matters that often require expensive expertise to be brought in. The issue of the confidentiality of information. Firstly, just bear in mind there is a section 4D of the ICASA Act that creates the framework for confidential information. So, I mean, in many of ICASA's processes, they require the submission of information, whether it's a new license, a license amendment, or any one of tens of processes, lots of information must be shared by operators to ICASA. And some of that information certainly cannot be made available to anyone. And then an operator would have an opportunity to submit to ICASA that this is confidential, and ICASA must then, following due process and depending on the parameters in Section 4D, determine whether they agree that it's confidential or not, so that information cannot be released to third parties. So it's necessary to ensure commercial interests are protected. So the Act specifies in which instances something can be declared confidential, such as trade secrets, financial, commercial, scientific or technical information, the disclosure of which is likely to cause harm to the commercial or financial interests of such person, to give just two examples. So bringing back that now to this current amendment that says that generally ICASA, to be more open and transparent, you have to, from now on, disclose the minutes of your meetings on your website, which is one of those mechanisms to ensure openness, transparency, and especially accountability for the actions of ICASA. But then there's this exception that is what the question is about, to say, except if such information in the minutes are part of this confidential information declared to be confidential. So I think that's reasonable. A due process under Section 4D to determine what's confidential, and when the minutes relate to such confidential information, that those parts of the minutes cannot be made available to the public, simply because it would be against the law. It would be against Section 4D. The issue of license exemption, Chairperson, that you specifically raised, Section 6 of the Electronic Communications Act deal with license exemption specifically, and allows the authority to prescribe regulations on which electronic communications network services don't require a license, which electronic communication services don't require a license, and when can you use radio frequency spectrum without a license. So ICASA have prescribed license exempt regulations, and there are regulating accordingly. The Act sets some examples there to say, for example, in Section 6, electronic communication service provided on a not-for-profit basis, that's one that can be exempted. Resellers is another example. Thirdly, private electronic communication networks is an example. Chairperson, your question also related to state of entity licensing. There, Honourable Chair, I can refer you to Section 3, 1 capital A of the ECA, that is the amendment that was, and that's why the Chairperson remembers it, it's the amendment that was inserted by the only amendment to the ECA that came, I think, in about 2007. And that section 3, 1A was inserted to create a special licensing mechanism for state-owned entities, and it reads, the minister may issue a policy direction in order to initiate and facilitate intervention by government in strategic infrastructure investment, and B, provide a framework for the licensing of a public entity by the authority in terms of Chapter 3. And that was done with InfraCo in mind, as the chair correctly points out, and then ultimately that's what was done, and that framework was directed and prescribed by ICASA, and the licensing of InfraCo commenced under that special framework for the SOE. I think, Chairperson, the reference was made to some paragraphs that were communicated by us in our presentation but not contained in the presentations. I think some of these were just additions to clarify some of the wording that we presented on the screen, and it's also useful. I think most, if not all, of what we've said is contained in the memorandum on the objects of the bill, which is contained at the back of the bill. So I doubt whether we'll be able to say much more than is contained in the objects memo, especially because this time around, Chairperson, we've been very proactive in our objects memo in order to ensure that as much information as possible was provided in the interest of openness and transparency. If compared to some of previous years, there's certainly a difference in the amount of information provided in the objects memos in the public interest.
There were pages that were not in the presentation. Yes. There were it's not that you were giving additional information. There were pages when we were presenting, we could really understand that you were, you know, motivating on what was on the paper. But there were pages that were missing. That's what the members are saying. So what you were saying as you were adding, that we were understanding that you were motivating to us the information that you were giving to us. Not that it's just you were giving additional information. There were pages that were missing. That the magistrate said about the sufficiency of the assessment. Remember, city raised it. Are looking for more? Let's fix there. This is the first presentation. We're still going to come together next week because we want to finalize this. But we want to get information so that when we are at home, we can sit down and go page by page, you know, so that when we come back, this the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprise, make no mistake, this committee knows their story. I just wanted to say that, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, do you want to say something? I didn't want anyone to respond to this because you apologized when we started. When the response time, you know, started, you apologized, and I was trying to put, you know, don't do that. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
Thanks, Chair. Let me put it out again. We removed the conclusion part from the presentation because I was going to do that. So that's what he was talking to. Then after he had read it, that's why I just went to a few points that I highlighted after the presentation. It was not because we undermined them, but because the conclusion part was going to be done by myself when I was making the concluding remarks. That was the only reason for it. Thank you.
I see no hands. Do you still want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. The last one I wanted to deal with was the matter of the of MPs and whether MPs can become councillors of ICASA. Section 6 of the existing ICASA Act provides for that by saying a person may not be appointed as a councillor if he or she is a member of parliament, any provincial legislature, or any municipal council. But I think it's, if my interpretation of that means you can't be a current member, as opposed to be a former member. In fact, I know of a former MP that is a Nakata councillor today. Thank you, Chairman.
Thanks, Chairperson. In relation to the matter of the quorum, the quorum of Ikasa is formed by the majority of the councillors, which is four plus one. I think that section was trying to clarify when the chairperson was not there to also include the chairperson. So it's part of the Ikasa Amendment Act. So we were trying to clarify that honourable member. In terms of political party, to say what is a registered political party, and we're dealing with the matter of during the election period and allocation of time. But a political party, here it says any registered party defined in terms of the Industrial Act, and those that register with the IEC for the election. So from our side, we usually do not define what is a political party. It's usually defined by this act, and then those that are registered with the IEC for the election period. But what we were also trying to do in the section is that you find that during the election there's allocation of time. And we wanted ICAPA, when it deals with the allocation of time, that is, it is done in line with how the law has defined it. But the department or the ministry goes in line with what has been defined in the Electoral Act and what is provided by the IEC of party that was registered with it for the election.
Honourable members, given there are no hands.
Only one.
Thank you, Deputy Minister, as well as the department, to respond so much. But lastly, as I indicated, you see, there are lots of people who claim to be researchers of the very same Ikasa and like. I'll put an example. What is your relationship with the, they call themselves as MPDP, which means Media Policy and Democratic Projects, meaning that they are also, they call themselves that they are in the University of South Africa Department of Communication. Do you have any relationship with those people?
Yeah, Chair. There's another one that has not been responded to on the issue of checks. I just wanted to know, why do you have to extend to other people? Because issues of checks, it's a very sensitive issue. And also on the issue of Kura, I just wanted to know what made it difficult for the council to form a Kura. Because these people are full time. You can't have a problem in forming a quorum.
Thanks, Shay. To respond to the question that was raised in terms of the research organizations that are there, we don't have any relationship with such organization. But Chair, one thing that I would request from the honorable members, that maybe it's high time that ourselves also give guidance to government and the country as a whole in terms of who comes and conducts research in our country. Because most of these research organizations are international funded. We don't know the objectives and then what is it that they do with the findings that they get from our people. So for us to be able to know exactly what is happening and who does what in our country, I think we need to take a strong stance as a parliament. I don't know how we are going to do it, but we need to find a way of ensuring that we have a coordinated research unit. It doesn't mean that you're only going to focus on internal researchers, but to say if you're coming from outside, this is what we expect, and then you must get authority and approval of the responsible authorities within the country. Thank you, Chair. The questions they will respond to.
The point is that responding to the second question from
Mr. Chairperson, I would just explain the following. In the ICASA Act, Chairperson, linked to the ECA Amendment Bill, we have eliminated certain functions there. For instance, there has been an experience at ICASA where you find that one councillor is delegated or as a chairperson decides to deal with an issue alone. And at the end, you find that the outcomes of such processes are not proper. And hence, it is important to also reflect on the term of the councillor, Honorable Jacobs. The issue is, Honorable Deputy Minister was explaining here, there is regulatory capture. Where you find that in the course of doing the work, for instance, you find that because the councillor has overstayed and knows so many about these organizations, tend to find themselves on the other side of the law. So here, when you designate that a license of an individual nature, which is a license of national scope, which is a license that can allow someone to build infrastructure from Cape to Messina, that matter cannot be delegated to one person. You also require that in such matters, there must be procedures on how to deal with them, amongst which is the fact that even if councillors have a trip to Geneva, it means that such matters have to be kept in abeyance. And so it could be absenteeism, of course, because the council is full-time. But such matters cannot be decided by a meeting which does not form a quorum. So these are the linkages we're trying to build in the legislation, if I were to answer in a long-rounded way. But the council is indeed full-time, and the roles of the chairperson are very clear, that the chairperson also has a voting right and cast a vote, and as such the meetings are able to proceed. I don't know if Colin, you want to add?
No addition. Okay. Deputy Minister, let me thank you very much, you and your team. Can you repeat
it? Yes, no, I'm here on the question now. No, okay. Chairperson, this issue of the signage of checks comes with the alignment of the responsibility of the CEO and those of council. We have now said in the legislation, in the amendment, that because there's a pattern that seems to have happened here at ICASA, Honorable Jacobs. We had a partial restructuring, which would have sidelined the important role of the CEO pertaining to financial accountability. Now, when it comes to signing of the checks, we are also extending that particular function so that you do not find that because the ICASA Council is an executive, now it is the only one that can actually see to the financial distribution or usage of the funds. But this is balanced for transparency and accountability purposes. And such that there is no limitation in terms of also the functioning of the organization, as it were. This is merely the reason. It is an evolving problem that has been taking place.
We'll engage next week. This is Ibuza next week. Yeah. still engaged next week. Like I said earlier, we were asking questions for clarity. Next week we're going to do deliberations in the bill, on the bill. So let me take this opportunity and thank you very much, especially the Deputy Minister, for having been with us. You must tell the DG, we're still waiting for her in this committee. She has never, she came once or twice, but I was even saying, Mr. Fury can be, we can even not say the DDG, when he is with us, we must say the DG, because he honors this committee. The DG, please, Deputy Minister, I'm telling you this, that she must please, you know, recognize this committee. Please. I'm happy. I'm happy you are here so that you can really. I'm not saying scammed, but it's scammed. It's a reality. You know, if we understand ministers goes to cabinet, and but in all the committees that we are having, the DG comes. DGs come. So the DG of communication never comes to us. And really, we would like to recognize this committee. Members, thank you very much. We will meet again next week. Thank you, the meeting is ended again. And thanks to the department, to everyone, to PMG, everyone who is in this room. Thank you.
We'll bother you later.